Ready to elevate your self-care game? Boss Gal Beauty Bar is a modern med spa offering everything from cosmetic injectables, lasers and microneedling, to medical-grade facials and skincare. Conveniently located in Clintonville, Grandview, Powell, and Easton, making self-care a priority has never been easier. Use code CROFT for $25 off your first visit. Monica Day. Welcome to the Carrie Croft Show. I feel like I need to change my... So this is the first thing I want to discuss is the news anchor voice.
Yeah.
How do you train for that? Like, so when you're just sitting here talking to me, you're going to talk differently than when you sit in front of the camera, right?
No.
Not at all?
Not really. I mean, you know, the only thing I think that's different, and I use my voice. Some people have like a different voice. I think the only thing that's different is the formality of it. So I may not use the same phrasing that I would if it was just you and I speaking. But like if I'm reading, I'm just reading. But depending on the story and the commentary, then my voice would – my everything would slip back into just like you and I talking. So
see,
I don't
like
have an anchor voice.
You actually, I think, naturally do.
And that could and you know what? That could be.
Which I think is probably,
it's probably
like,
a good thing.
Now here I go. I'm going to analyze already. We're like right on the starting block. But it's probably why you have this authentic, fun vibe where people feel like they know you because it's just you.
Right.
You're not like, so welcome to NBC4 with
Monica.
You're just like, hey, like I woke up like this.
And, you know, it's interesting. When I first started at the TV station, I didn't have any television experience. And so I was kind of like learning on the job, and the anchors that I was starting off with did not have anchor voices. Like there was no fake voice that they put on. They just spoke and they had great voices and they enunciated, you know. And there was a reporter, and when I was tracking packages, my voice, it would change a bit. And this reporter that had been in the market for years, she said, "You have such a great voice. Don't change it at all." And I said, "Oh, okay." She goes, "You sound great. Don't change it." And so from that kind of point on, even when I was tracking something, because, you know, when you're reading in a booth, sometimes it changes. I really kind of consciously tried to stop letting that happen.
Yeah. Okay. This is your choice. This is choose your own adventure.
Okay.
Okay. Start deep. Mm-hmm. Start light.
Let's go deep.
Okay, good. I love that.
Why
okay,
not?
So I was reading your form, clearly researching and reading your form.
Yeah.
And the one thing that you put on there, which by the way, I will have to give you your MVP of filling out the intake form to this day.
Really?
It made me laugh out loud. It was so good. I was like, okay, we're friends already. Like this chick she's on it. It was really good.
I had some help.
Who helped you?
So the part that was like, how would others describe you?
Yeah.
I was sitting next to my co-anchor, Matt, and I was like, how would you describe me? And he's like, starts giggling. And I'm like, come on. He's like, this is a loaded question. And then Jen and Jared, we like sit in a line. They're like, come on, it's not that hard. And they started rambling stuff off. And I'd basically already written it all myself. But
yeah,
I just wanted, you know,
I like
to make sure that I'm on track with what other people think.
But I love the descriptors. And I like that even more now that I know that your colleagues wrote that. Like sarcastic, direct, compassionate. I think fun.
Yeah, fun.
I don't know. It was a really good mix of things.
Yeah, good things.
Because I feel like with you, like you were Miss Congeniality, which mm-hmm. we'll also get into, which blows my mind. I'm always so fascinated by Miss Congenialities because I am like kind of the anti, like that would not have been me.
Right.
Which I kind of wish I could have reined that in a little bit.
All you have to do is sway one person not to vote for themselves and to vote for you.
True. So, maybe there's
we don't know what the tally was there.
Maybe they're right. This is true. But I feel like sometimes that could be someone who's like super nice to everyone and pleasing and trying to.
Yes.
But having the directness, the sarcasm and all that, I feel like you have a good mix of shit.
It was fun.
A really good mix of fun.
And other people have fun.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
With me. Like we had a good time.
Yeah. Okay. So now let's go into the deep, the deep sea, you and I. So it struck me when you said that you lived basically alone when you were eight, like your senior year in
senior
high school.
Year. Yeah.
And I read that and I felt like, oh my God, I feel seen because I had a similar situation happen in my life. And I remember how it affected me. So curious, I'm curious when you look back on that time being such a formidable, like, that's a crazy time in your life. Being alone, like, just go back a little bit.
So, you know, it's interesting. I ran into one of my old high school friends, and we had been friends, you know, all through high school, basically. And as adults, I was doing the graduation ceremony for Whitehall. That's where I graduated from. Go Rams. Mm-hmm. And so I was, like, their keynote speaker, and his nephew was graduating. And he came up, and he's like, and I mentioned, you know, a little bit about my story during that speech. And he was like, man, you know, those were some crazy times. I can't believe that you went through that. And it was kind of like, I had never really stopped to think, like, I had went through something so deep that the people that I was even close with at the time thought that it was weird, or that it was like a trying time. The fact that, like, this guy who I hadn't seen in, you know, 20 years and I was really tight with at the time still looks back on that and thinks, like, that was a lot. It kind of opened my eyes up a little bit more to it. What happened was my mom and my stepdad, they had moved my freshman year of high school. There was a lot going on. They had moved to Florida. They were trying to kind of fix their relationship, figure things out, you know. And I lived with my grandparents at that time. So fast forward to my senior year, things are still not good. My stepdad had a lot of demons. He was a great guy. He was like the kind of guy that everybody loved, you know. And my mom had been, you know, she was like president of the PTA, and she used to make my Halloween costumes. But she also was overcoming her upbringing that wasn't like the typical Ozzie and Harriet type of situation. And, you know, so she was doing the best that she could. When we got to my senior year, their relationship was over. And so my dad, my stepdad, Chuck, he moved down south. He like hit the road, you know. And my mom was working for my grandfather. My grandfather's in the restaurant business. And she like met one of her old boyfriends and kind of rekindled that. And she was going through all these things emotionally. And my uncle Nick lived down in Key West. He's like, come down to the Keys, work this season. You can send money back up to Ohio. And I was like, I'm not moving with my grandparents. And I was a mess, you know. And so we kind of had this deal where she would send money up and I would live in this apartment. Well, she like didn't necessarily make it to the Keys. She made it to Florida with this old boyfriend that she had rekindled a relationship with. He turned out to be psycho kind of situation. And he might be watching this. He turned out not to be what she had imagined, you know? And so she eventually came back. But in that time, I spent my senior year. Actually, she didn't come back. She went to South Carolina. Let me rephrase that. She went to live where my grandma was living. So I was senior year in this apartment. And sometimes she sent money back and sometimes it wasn't coming. And so my grandparents were helping out. I was working like two jobs. Like there were, you know, like electricity was going to get shut off. This like crazy. She had left me with who I convinced her was a responsible adult, who was a bartender at Lone Star Steakhouse and Saloon, which is one of the jobs I was working. Her name was Christine, and we jokingly called her Nanny Christine. She was like some 20-something woman who I convinced my mom, like, yeah, she's responsible. And Christine's like, yeah, I'm responsible. And then she ended up not leaving the bedroom and just like smoking cigarettes and drinking and stopped working. You know, like, it was a mess. My grandparents had to like kick her out. And then I had like these friends from school who had like abusive situations at home that ended up like living in my basement, like two different friends at two different times. One that turned out not to be a great situation. The other one was a better situation. But it was just, it was wild. I look back on it now and I'm like, who was the, like, who let this happen? Like, I'm going, yeah, let's do this. Yeah, great. Cause at the time I'm like a 17-year-old with issues. And I'm thinking, this is awesome situation for me. But no one else was like, this isn't.
Pump the brakes.
Like, hold on. And, you know, my mom's friends, who I call my aunts and uncles, they were all like looking in on me. You know, I was in an apartment complex that I had lived in for years with friends and friends' parents around. But it was definitely like not a situation my children will ever be in.
also, so many people would have just continued to sort of spiral down a certain path,
yeah,
not a good path.
Yeah.
So there had to be something that kind of reached out to you,
yeah,
and pulled you through to become this successful, good parent that you are. Like, what would you attribute the most to you being able to figure that out?
You know, there were teachers that were trying to help me along the way. Like, you know, my mom came back, my stepdad came back, because they weren't going to let me graduate high school. Like, I missed so much school. You know, I was like late. My teacher would mark me absent if I was late, basically. Like, I was screwed. And everybody kind of rallied around. My Miss Plank, my art teacher, and my theater director, and Miss Katz, our other art teacher, was like, help. They were helping me to write these papers that I had missed, because my English teacher, I was in AP English. I was still passing, by the way. And he was like, you have to finish everything that you missed in order to graduate. Because I was just taking tests. I was like, I'm getting good grades. I'm taking these tests. I'm acing these tests. I'll just graduate. And they're like, that's not
how it works.
How it works. And so, you know, the fact that he agreed to let me do that in order to graduate. And the funny thing was, because my mom had been so involved, I don't think anybody like believed that I was just in this apartment with very little supervision. And so it really took my parents coming back and both of them being kind of like, yeah, we did this. We kind of screwed up. You can't punish her for what we've done. She's passing. What can she do to get through this? And so that helped. And then I think I was at a place where I just didn't have a lot of self-worth. And the funny thing is at that same time, I had started doing pageants. I'd always done theater and performance, and I loved it. And I really found in the pageants, not that they were giving me like the sense of, oh, you're pretty, which I didn't have a great sense of, oh, you're pretty, because I wasn't like, my friends were cheerleading captains. They were blonde. They had big boobs. Everybody wanted to date them. I was the friend, you know? And so even though like I didn't feel like the pretty girl, I knew I was attractive. You know, I wasn't one of those people that's like, oh, I'm so ugly. Like I knew that I wasn't ugly. I just didn't think I was appealing to the masses. And so through the pageants, yeah, you get a little sense that, oh, well, maybe I can gussy myself up a little bit, or maybe, you know, I am pretty and not just the friend, which is at that age important. But it also gave me a sense of wanting to do better for somebody else. So when you're doing like Miss Ohio, like little kids are looking up to you. You know, they're in the audience looking at you and they're trying to mimic what you're doing. And so that really kind of made me stop and think about the choices that I was making. And I didn't like about face. It took a long time. But by the time that I was Miss Ohio, I realized that I needed to do better, not just for myself, but for other people that were looking up to me. The pageants gave me the confidence to see myself as worthy, if you will.
And you're like, I'm Miss Ohio.
Right?
How the hell did that happen? I mean, I... You know,
literally.
I mean, talk about a confidence booster.
Yeah.
And because that's what I was sort of thinking when I was thinking about you and the pageants and your background. I'm thinking, I bet you that those pageants probably were a game changer. And then
Yeah. Next
thing you know, you're Miss Ohio, mm-hmm. and then the opportunities it changes your whole trajectory.
Yeah, it was interesting because when I started doing the pageants, and I started competing for Miss Ohio. I was competing for the Miss America system as a scholarship pageant. And I did it for 2 years. I was top 10, but I wasn't going to college. And so I shifted into the Miss USA system. And it was more like being in a show. Like you show up, you're there for a couple of days, you learn your marks, and, you know, it's a production. And I liked that energy. Interview's a big part of it. And I've always been comfortable talking to people. And so that was good for me to have interview play such a big part. Because to be honest, in the pageant world, I was a little chubby like compared to the other
wasn't?
Contestants.
I mean, it's like every, like that's
right.
Not, we'll get into that whole thing.
Yeah. And
it's
so,
crazy.
You know, the year before my last year, I had this judge and he was really nice and everything. And made the comment to me if I was going to come back to work out just a little bit more. And in the nicest Southern pageant way, because much like theater, pageants, like that's part of it. And they're going to tell you that, you know what you're signing up for. It's not for the faint of heart. So fast forward, I come back the next year or 2 years later, I win. I'm at Miss USA. That judge is there. And he comes up to me and he's like, I was so excited to see that you had won. You always had the prettiest face. You were just a little bit chubby. But look at you now. And it's like, you hear it and it's like, okay, it's mildly offensive. But you have to put yourself in the situation of what it is. Mm-hmm. And that was a very high praise from this pageant guy. I don't even know his name. But I remember, I think back on that moment. You know, and think like this guy really helped me kind of kick my butt in gear to win. Because the reality is, if you're in a beauty pageant and part of it is a swimsuit, you got to go out and look damn good in your swimsuit.
Yep.
And as much as people want to say that's sexist or it's this or it's that, that's what it is. Mm. I didn't sign up, you know, to be in a classroom writing a paper. I signed up to put a bikini on and strut across the stage, and I'm okay with that. I don't feel, you know, like violated or exploited or anything else. And if you're going to do that, you got to do it.
Yeah. And I agree with you. And it's interesting because in today's world, you hear that and you're like, oh my, you know, but yes. You are right.
Right.
You're in a pageant
and
there are expectations. It's like no different than if you went into like a bodybuilding competition or whatever. I mean, there are certain trappings of, albeit that would be a little hard.
It's hard. And I've had a similar conversation in the workplace, like fast forward, that I had to like pump the brakes on and say, you can't say that to people.
Deciphering here between actually it's going into this sport of pageantry.
Right.
Right. Where there are, if you want to win.
Yeah.
You're going to have some tough skin.
Yeah.
Okay. So understanding what he said and how he said it.
Yeah.
Now you being Monica Day on NBC4.
Right.
Right. Clearly you're beautiful and all the things. But I think with that comes a ton of scrutiny.
Yeah.
And probably lots of sexism and comments and things from the community feeling like they have the, they're allowed.
Right.
To talk about your hair, your face, your weight, everything else.
Yeah.
But then you're like, okay, hold on. We ain't in the pageants.
Right.
So let's just have like,
I'm not in a bikini for you.
Right.
So, you know, we get that a lot from like viewers comments. I had a guy during the pandemic, we're sitting at a weird angle on the set and I'm 5 months pregnant, sitting on a weird angle on this set so that we're social distant, like, so, you know, the 6 foot thing. And he emailed me and he was like, you really need to look in the mirror and put the cheeseburger down. So I responded and said, I think you need to look in the mirror and ask yourself what is wrong with you. I'm 5 months pregnant. So then he responds back. He's like, I'm so sorry. I didn't realize. Even if you did, even if I wasn't, it's not okay. Like, it's not okay to target me because I look a little bit heavier than what you would like me to look, because as much as I work in a visual medium and I get that, like, I need to look a certain way. That doesn't mean I need to be a size 2. And it certainly doesn't mean that I should be judged based on the size of my waist or, you know, the color of my hair or anything else. You know, my co-anchor isn't getting judged that way. Sometimes they are.
That was going to be a question I was going to ask you.
And sometimes they are.
The men who aren't necessarily, that don't necessarily have six packs who are on the news, are they getting the type of scrutiny that the females?
And I think that's the thing that's not talked about often. Like, we get more of it. You know, it's like, oh, that dress was ugly. Oh, I don't like your hair. Oh, I don't like this. We get more of it. But the guys get it too. And it comes from a place of people are very comfortable with us. We're in their homes and they feel like they can say whatever they want. Or sometimes it's just like a troll behind a keyboard. And they feel like they can attack you for how you look. And on one level, I'm in the public eye and I'm in a visual medium and I get it. But there's a certain point where it's like, that's not the that's not the only thing I'm bringing to the table. That's not the most important thing that I'm bringing to the table or this guy is bringing to the table. But, you know, people are nasty sometimes.
I mean, P.S., for as beautiful as you are, I mean, your hair alone, I'm like, what the hell? Are you not a hair model? I mean, if you're going to get scrutiny, screw the rest of us. You know, it's crazy.
I think it's also a lot of times it's just people that are having, and because I've gotten these emails from people too after the fact, apologizing for whatever it is they sent. They were having a moment. They're feeling insecure. They're, you know, a husband cheated on them with a brunette. You know, like, and so now they're targeting every brunette and they just happen to have my email address.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, sometimes it's not even me. It's them.
Yeah. It's always them.
Hurt people. Like projecting, you know, they're projecting something on me because they can't deal with it themselves.
But that has to be, you really have to build that muscle of not giving a fuck because getting something like that consistently, and whether it's once a quarter or once every 2 weeks, that has to be something you just let roll. Be like, I'm Monica Day. Like, I know my worth. Yeah. I know who I am. I know I'm hot. Like,
and I think it's too, when you've done theater for as long as I did theater, that helped with the pageants because I understood, like, this is all in the eye. Like, the person that's casting me may be looking for a blonde and I'm a brunette. In the pageants, the person that's judging me may like redheads, you know? And so taking those two worlds of being kind of picked apart, TV, I'm like, whatever.
Yeah.
Been there, done that. Like, I realize that not everybody's going to like me. My pageant coach used to say, some people like Snickers. Some people like, you know, Three Musketeers. You can't be everybody's favorite candy bar.
Mm-mm.
And I think that's true in life. You know, that's one of the lessons that I pulled from pageants that I think has really helped me.
And I think that's really hard for a lot of people.
It is.
It's so hard. It's the worst feeling to feel like you're not liked. And
I think
when you can really hone in on the fact, like, I don't like everyone.
No.
You don't like everyone.
I don't like everyone.
So, like, let's own that.
Yeah.
And then be for the people who are for you.
Yes. And just be kind to the, even if you don't like someone.
Be kind.
Be kind. Like, mm-hmm. My daughter has, on occasion, problems with different people, like, in school or sports or whatever it is. And I always say to her, because she wants to please everyone. And I'm like, Press, not everyone is going to be your friend, but you can be friendly to everyone. You don't need to go out of your way. But if they are going to be nice to you that day, you can be nice back. Just don't base your worth on those days when they choose to make you feel worthy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. So before we close the loop on the story we started with about you living alone.
Yeah.
So where was your biological dad in all of this?
So my parents divorced when I was 2 or 3 or something like that. And my father was an alcoholic. And he, you know, was going through a lot of turmoil. And at the time, my grandparents were financially very sound. And so when my parents divorced, my grandfather, who was intimidating, said to my dad, we've got this. It's best that you just don't. And so my mother never went after child support. She never attempted really to contact him. There was one time that I needed money for like dance classes or something. And she reached out to his mom to see if he could contribute. And his mom said, now's not a good time, because he suffered with alcoholism for many, many years. And my mom kept in touch with his mother just to let her know like how I was doing and kept her updated. And I had met my grandmother and my grandfather when I was 18. And I had talked to her a couple of times prior to that. But that was really the relationship with his family. And when I was in my late 20s, early 30s, I reached out to my brother on Facebook. And I knew that I had 2 younger sisters also. My dad had been married 3 times. He had my brother, and then he married again and has my two sisters. And so I reached out to him on Facebook. He and I connected. And then my sister Lily, who is significantly younger, I didn't want to reach out to them and rock their world. They were like in high school. When I found out about them, they were even younger. I was 18, but they were, you know, a lot younger. She reached out to me, and my sister Chloe reached out to me. And my stepmom, whose family is amazing, they're from the Akron area. And my sister Chloe, who was like 13, you know, now we're fast forwarding and I'm married, I'm 31 or something. She sent me a message and said, it was so cool to see you on TV today. And I was like, see me on TV? It's like, are you in Columbus? You know? And she's like, I'm with my aunt and my grandma, we came down to see my cousin who lives in Columbus. And I was like, oh my God, we should get together. So her aunt, my stepmom's sister, and her grandmother drove her to Columbus. She was like 13, I think, and drove her to Columbus. We met, spent time at her cousin's house, went to Dirty Frank's, like, you know, did the whole, showed her the field of corn because they live in Virginia. And you know, that sparked my dad to then reach out to me. And so he called, I answer, and he's like, can I come see you? And I'm like, yeah. So he drove to Columbus from Virginia Beach, and we rekindled and, you know, kind of talked about the past and everything that had happened. And I think based on the age that I was and the place where I was and the mental space that I was, it was just like, hey, nice to meet you. Let's have a relationship. Like, there wasn't this, like, anything to overcome. My mom had to overcome it a little bit. She was a little worried and concerned. And I think just, you know, feeling like, am I going to lose part of her to him? You know, like, is she going to be mad at me? What's he going to say? And now they're cool too. But it was like, it was a whole thing. And then he and my brother hadn't spoken in years. And so we were all going to like go to Virginia, and I'm like, you know, let reach out to Pat. And so my brother Pat, like, we all went to Virginia Beach, and like, we're just in this, you know, like at the house, like nothing had ever happened. Like no time had ever passed. And so it's been this really great relationships, but it's only been in the last like 10 years. And my stepmom, Becky, they have my sister Lily and then my sister Chloe. And, you know, she basically was like, you got to stop drinking or you're going to lose this family. And my dad was like, I'm not losing this family. And so he hasn't drank in, I don't know, 20 some odd years since my sister Chloe was born. And so that's been huge.
Oh yeah.
You know,
it's everything.
It's everything. And it's hard. It's hard when you have an addiction to admit it, to overcome it. And sometimes you get knocked down and you get knocked down and you have to keep trying, but like eventually you can get there. Like you can make it to the end where you have everything that seems so far out of reach,
mm-hmm.
you know? And it's not that it's not a struggle. I'm sure it's a struggle for him even still, the demons that he was using that alcohol to cover up, you know, are still there. The things from his past that were so painful that he tried to wash them out, are still there, but he's just come to a place where he can accept it. Like sometimes you don't overcome things. You come to a place of acceptance and life. Like you live through it, you know?
Do you find that looking back on your relationships, did you pick certain types of guys because of your dad not being around?
You know, I think I was angry. I spent a lot of my life being angry or happy. I didn't sit in sadness very often, and I think that hurt me. And I think the reason I did that was because I didn't want to deal with the things that were upsetting to me. And, you know, and my mom struggled with the things that upset her, and it was difficult for her to help me kind of emotionally move through those things. And so, you know, I think I made a lot of bad choices without realizing why I was making the bad choices. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the guys that I dated a lot of just like, just the most random, like it makes no sense from this one to this one to the all different looks, interests. And it was really, I think just, And it wasn't even always that they like treated me that well or not well. It was just somebody that like I had a spark with, and I was like, okay, yeah, let me try to find something that I'm looking for in you. And, you know, you never find what you're looking for because it's in you. Like, you have to deal with your own stuff. So I think I was constantly kind of searching for this thing that wasn't mm-hmm. something you find.
And now the mother-daughter relationship is challenging in the best of circumstances, yeah. or can be.
Yeah.
Do you find that all that stuff that happened in the past is in the past, or do you find that it still comes up with you today? Like, have you done therapy? Are you actively working on that?
Yeah.
Because I'm sure it's probably still there sometimes, right?
Yeah. So there are times where my mom and I's relationship has been like rocky at times. Mm-hmm. But I think that there is like an understanding, like that we're all just trying to do our best, you know? And mm-hmm. my mom's like a really beautiful person. Like, she just has, she's one of those people that like strangers are very much attracted to. Like, I can remember the guys in the McDonald's like drive-through lines hitting on her all the time based solely on her voice, because she has, you know, just seems pleasant. And then she's very attractive, yeah. you know, especially when I was younger, like all my guy friends had crushes on her type
of thing. She was a MILF.
Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. she was like before the mom in the bikini at the pool, you know, like, and she was a younger mom. She was like 23 when she had me, and, you know, she's boobs and thin and yeah. Green eyes. You know, she's just very attractive. Mm-hmm. And she has like an energy that kind of brings people to her. And like she was like a waitress and a bartender a lot. So she's just got that like, hey, honey, what do you need type of vibe? And so I think understanding who my mom is, you know, as an adult, looking at understanding who she is and what she's been through, I think has helped a lot with that. You know, our relationship is different than a lot of people's relationships, but it's our relationship. Like, I love her. But it's, I think it's difficult for anybody. Like, even if you have the best mom, it can be a super difficult situation. And like, her mom was very cool. Like, my grandma Marcy was like an artist. She was like very cool. You know, like, she was into, you know, the things that my mom was into, like the musicians and stuff. And very intelligent. She was a model, very beautiful, but not maternal, like was not a maternal person. I was her only grandchild that called her grandma, you know? And so I think I have to think about that when I'm thinking about my mom and how much she had to overcome to be the mom that made my Halloween costumes, that threw the luau for me, you know, like those things.
It's funny that I was going to circle back to that. Cause you wrote that you love Halloween and, yeah. you know, previously you just mentioned about the making your Halloween costumes. I mean, you think about this young mom, I'm picturing this woman that looks somewhat like you with mm-hmm. your same aura, and she's just doing her damnedest.
She's like Sheryl Crow. That's what she looked like, and that was yeah. her vibe. Like yeah. kind of a Sheryl Crow type of thing.
Yeah. yeah. Do you make your kids Halloween costumes?
I do.
Do you?
And it's kind of one of those things, you know, where it's like your memories, those core memories, you know, when you look at what you're doing, it's like, why do I do this? Well, it's because my mom made those Halloween costumes for me. So, you know, so I want to do that for my kids mm-hmm. so they can think back on that, mm-hmm. you know. And my birthday parties for my kids are ridiculous. I'm fully, like, aware. It's over the top. It's too much. I stress myself out. I stress everybody out. Like, it's awful, but I love it, and they love it. And it's because my mom threw a luau party for me for my 12th birthday at our apartment complex pool. Where she, and this was before the days of like Pinterest and all Amazon sending crap to your house. She like cored out pineapples and got dry ice and made glasses for everyone and created a volcano cake, and it erupted and brought in a hula dancer. Like, you know, and so when I think back on my birthdays, like, that was the greatest birthday. And so I see why I go out of my way to throw these parties for my kids, because I want them to have that mm-hmm. and I want to hold on to that, because one day they're going to be like, I don't want your stupid birthday.
Well, you're you know? Absolutely right about
yeah.
that.
And so it's like, and so those things and festivals. Like, we used to go to every freaking festival, and she would make me dance to Brown Eyed Girl with her. And I do the same crap to my kids. My husband hates festivals, and I make him go to every festival, every amusement park, because that's what we did. That was the core memories for me.
What's your husband's name?
Sean.
Sean, you're not going to win that battle, buddy. Just succumb. Yeah. Succumb to the festival.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this is a good time to bring up Elvis.
Yes.
So am I to assume that it was your mom's love for Elvis that, or is that a...
So my mom and I share a love of Jimmy Buffett. Jimmy Buffett, Patsy Cline, Michael Jackson. That was like...
I
got from my mom. My Elvis love came from my grandma, Diana, my step-grandma, my mom's stepmom. And she loves Elvis. And we've gone to Elvis Week, I mean, I think like almost 30 times. Like, we went from the time I was 8, I went for like 25 years
to Graceland?
To Graceland for Elvis Week. Yeah. I went pregnant with my daughter, Presley.
So you're, and her name's, by the way, her name's Presley.
Yeah.
By design, which is a great name. What was Graceland like anyway? I've never been there.
It's cool. Well, okay. It's still cool. So when I started going to Elvis Week, it was very like, there was like a flatbed trailer. These Elvis impersonators would get up there and sing. It was very folksy. Since then, it's evolved. Graceland Enterprises has taken on more of an interest. They've built it up. So it's not as like folksy. It's more, you know, you go to these events. But it's cool because everybody's there celebrating, you know, this person who had an impact on everything. Whether you like Elvis or not, especially if you're from a certain area, like, the impact was felt. And even still, you know. And so all these people are just there loving that, celebrating that. All ages. People that met him. People that weren't born. You know, people that love all of his music, love his movies, you know, and then you just learn about like the person that he was, and you see all the joy and all the sadness in who he was. And so the experience has been, I think, really is one of those places where you go and you meet people from around the world, and it opens up something in you to realize the connection that we all have. At a young age, you start to realize, oh, I'm very much connected to these people from France who are here to celebrate Elvis, you know, like how easy something is to relate to someone. It may just be that one thing that I have in common with someone, this love of Elvis, but there's 100,000 people there, you know, that feel the same way.
Your musical taste is so eclectic, which I appreciate because mine is too, but yours is even, I think, more broad in terms of some of the, I was like, wow, she really, this is good. So is Elvis like on your play? Like, are you listening to Elvis like on a daily, weekly? Like, what's the frequency of the Elvis?
So Elvis is on my playlist more now than ever because my son has recently become obsessed with Elvis. I have a friend who's, well, I have several friends that are Elvis impersonators, but one is this guy, Dean Z, and he's out of Branson, Missouri. And he was in Lima doing a show. So my grandma took me and my grandma and the kids went up to Lima to see the show. And they had a show with Dean. And my son afterwards started dressing up like Elvis. I ordered him an Elvis outfit from Amazon. He asked me if he could take it to school to show his friends. I said, yeah, sure. He put it on and put on a show at his school. So we listen to a lot more Elvis now than what I would normally listen to. But, you know, it's like, yeah, it's definitely like playlist. I've got the satellite radio, the Elvis channel's on there. So if I'm not listening to, you know, CD 101 or whatever it's called now, I'm listening to like Elvis or Jimmy Buffett or Bob Marley channel on the satellite radio.
So you're really sad about Jimmy Buffett, I assume.
Devastated. Mm-hmm. And when my husband told me that, I thought it was that thing that people were doing.
The fake news.
And I was like, screw you. That's not funny. He's like, no, I'm serious. I was like, what do you mean? And I'm freaking devastated. I turned 40 a couple years ago and he was doing a show down in Cincinnati. And I had said, oh, I want to go see Buffett for my birthday, my summer birthday. Take the kids. We didn't go. And I will kick myself forever for not going and taking them to a Buffett concert. Like, my mom took me to see Buffett at it. Germain, the Polaris Amphitheater. And like, I'll never forget it. It was awesome. I was a teenager. I didn't even have my license. I had my temps. And my mom and my Aunt Karen had some drinks. So I drove home. But I have my temps, right. And I had an adult in the car.
Hey, listen.
They were drunk, but it was fine. It was better than them driving.
You're talking to somebody who stole the car when I was like 14, yeah. So we're good.
Yeah, so it was good. But it was like, you know, it was a blast. My best friend Kelly and I, my mom took us, because my mom and Aunt Karen would always go up to Buckeye Lake and do it up. And I could never go because they were like partying. And so finally, I think I was turning 16 and they're like, all right, let's go.
Does Sean like Elvis?
Sean does like Elvis.
That was probably a deal breaker for you if he wouldn't have.
It would have been a problem. So when I got pregnant, I was 35. And or I was going to deliver at 35. And they said, you know, you could have twins. The older you are, the greater your chances of twins. I was like, no, I didn't know that. And we had one name picked. Like whether it was a boy or a girl, this one name was going to be the name. So I was like, I got to get another name. And I was like, oh, how about Presley? And I thought he was going to shoot it down. And he was like, yeah, I like that. So when we found out that Press was a girl, I thought Presley sounded better for a girl. And Palmer was the original name. Could still go either way. And so we named my daughter Presley. And when we had our son, we named him Palmer after Arnold Palmer.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because we're into golf too.
Facing challenges conceiving? Experience compassionate care from leading fertility experts at Reproductive Gynecology and Infertility in Ohio. At RGI, your dedicated navigator is a call or text away for concierge support throughout your journey. Start your path to parenthood at rgiohio.com.
I feel like you have the potential to be like Today Show, like...
I'll tell you this. If the Today Show called me and offered me $20 million,
you'd be
I'm
out.
I would come visit.
I'm outie.
But no, I'm not trying to leave.
Yeah.
There was a time where I would have left to go to like certain cities. It wasn't even like bigger markets. It was like, they are bigger markets, but it was like certain cities that I would live in. I'm not into bouncing around, trying to, you know, climb this TV thing. Like, I like Columbus. I love Columbus. I got family here, especially now that I've got the kids and stuff. Like, where am I going to go? I don't want to live in Denver. It's a cool place. I don't want to live there. I don't want to live in Chicago. Like, it's a hassle. I'll go visit. I want to be here, you know?
I think you're in the right spot, too.
I think so, too.
Because Columbus is such an up-and-coming city.
I mean, absolutely.
It's been such an underdog or underrated,
yeah,
I feel like.
For sure.
But I think post-pandemic,
yeah,
when all this craziness is happening in these larger cities,
yeah,
I just think that it's kind of getting its shine.
It's a good spot.
More shine than it has in the past.
For sure.
One more question about Elvis. Did you guys dance to an Elvis song for your first dance at your wedding?
No.
What song did you dance to?
We danced and walked down the aisle to Jason Mraz. I Won't Give Up.
Oh,
that was called.
Okay.
I Won't Give Up on Us.
Oh, yeah. I love that.
Yeah. That was our song.
So when you're you can sing.
I can sing.
Like you can hold a tune.
I can hold a tune.
Like what?
I could carry one in a bucket.
Like what? Like what would be something you would rip out?
Like if I was...
Right now, for your kids or for anyone, just like something that would sound good, that would show off your voice.
Well, I'm not, I don't know about that. If I was doing like a song for my kids,
yeah,
I might sing, like you're putting me on the spot. Oh, my mom used to sing this to me and I've sing it to the kids.
I want to hear your, I think people want to hear the singing voice.
Okay. Well, this one is by the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band.
Okay. I already like them.
Yeah. Winnie the Pooh doesn't know what to do. Got a honey jar stuck on his nose. He came to me seeking help and advice, and from here no one knows where he goes. So I sent him to ask the owl if he's there, how to loosen the jar from the nose of a bear.
I mean, you really are. I was like this.
That's why I sing to my kids.
Mommy!
Yeah. Now, if I was like, you know, doing karaoke, it would probably be like Bobby McGee or something, you know?
You can rip out Bobby McGee.
If I'm doing karaoke, it's either that or it's going to be like Snoop. It's one way or another.
I knew I liked you from the minute I saw you, Monica Day. I really did. I mean, you have that kind of clusterfuck of awesome that I love in a human.
That's basically how I describe my life, as a clusterfuck.
But you are this, like, it's like you don't know what angle you're going to come from, but each angle, I'm like, I like it. I like each angle more than the previous angle.
Thank you.
I'm into you.
It's good to have angles.
It's really good to have angles. So you have a dog that actually almost lit your house on fire.
So I have three dogs. Mr. Puffy Butt, who's turning 15. He's a Shih Tzu poodle mix. Mr. Bumper, who is turning 13. He's a Shih Tzu Lhasa Apso mix. They both are diabetic. Mr. Puffy Butt's blind. He's deaf. He's arthritic. Bumper's got a heart murmur. And then we also have another dog, Brutus. He is a lab retriever, like, mix. One of our dogs lit our house on fire, of those three, by getting up on the island and trying to get some dessert off of the island for my husband's 40th birthday party. And he somehow ignited the stove, and he had pulled a Tupperware container of cupcakes onto the stove, and that then proceeded to burn for an hour until we got home. So I won't say which dog did it, but of the three, you can decide which dog you think might be able to reach the counter.
So I just am trying to picture that scene.
So we were gone.
You were gone.
Yeah. So we left our house around 4:30 to go to my father-in-law's. It was Super Bowl Sunday, my husband's birthday, his stepmom's birthday. And I was like, you know what? We need to get home before the game starts. And our dogs are diabetic. Like, they have to have insulin injections. And so Sean's like, yeah, let's leave before the game starts. Okay, cool. We get in the car, and I get a text from my neighbor, and she says that there's a beeping at the house, and she hopes it's not the fire alarm. So I just text her back. I say, oh, we're on our way home. We'll be there soon. We pull in, and we live in a ranch, and we always leave the lights on for the dogs. And it was, like, black. And we're like, oh, my God, I forgot to turn the lights on. And as we're pulling up, we can hear the beeping. I was like, that's our fire alarm. So Sean, we park the car at the end of the driveway. Sean goes up. He opens the door, and he said it was, like, 4 feet of smoke down from the ceiling. Like, you couldn't see the lights. They were blacked out by the smoke. And there were, like, 3-foot flames on our island from the stove. So he turns the stove off. Like, the fire's out. We call the fire department just to be safe. They come check it out. They leave. And one of the other neighbors says, we heard the fire alarms at, like, 5:30. And we looked in, and everything looked fine. And the dog seemed fine, so we thought maybe they were malfunctioning, and we didn't know how to get a hold of you. So for an hour, this fire was burning, and our house just totally filled with smoke. Thankfully, it didn't, like, damage. There wasn't, like, real structural damage. They had to replace, like, part of the ceiling and the island and, you know, that sort of thing, and repaint everything. But they had to throw out, like, all of our kids' toys and all of our furniture. They cleaned a lot. Like, they were able to clean and store a lot of our, like, clothing and stuff. But, yeah, it's been...
That's a day ruiner.
Yeah.
How do you handle something like that? Did you lose your shit?
I mean, no. You know what I did? The dogs were okay. The kids were okay. They were freaked out. Yeah. Like, our first thought was, we have to get this soot off these dogs. So then we had to, like, clean out a bathtub and put the dogs in there and try to, like, get the soot off of the dogs. And it was like, where are we going to stay? So in that situation, it's like, there's so much stuff you have to think about that you can't even, like, I can't even get upset. Like, everybody's alive. The house didn't burn down, but I got to do X, Y, and Z, you know, to, like, survive. And we thought that the basement didn't have smoke damage. So we stayed in the basement for, like, a couple nights until the insurance company came, and they're like, you can't stay here. Like, I had said to them, oh, can I clean a bathroom so that we could, like, bathe and stuff? And they're like, yeah, just take pictures and then you can clean a bathroom. So then when they came in, they're like, have you been eating this food? We're like, yeah. They're like, no, you can't. It got in your fridge. And we're like, what? Like, we were, you know, but we didn't know. We had no idea. And then they're like, we have to throw all this stuff out. And so it's kind of like this process where it's so, like, it's so up here. You're just like, okay, going through the motions. Now that we're getting closer and closer to getting back in our house, now the anxiety is more kicked in for me. The, like, grieving has more kicked in for me. And for the kids, too, because, you know, they've lost, like, all of their stuff, you know. And, like, the clothes that they didn't lose, they've outgrown. So they're going into, like, new bedroom stuff. And as much as it's exciting, it's difficult. And even the idea, the concept for my son, especially, I think of like, this isn't coming back, is difficult for him to grasp. And, you know, so they've had some like emotional issues because of it, just trying to process all that. It's tough. And even for me, like right now, it's difficult for me to process, like, I'm going to have to unpack all of this stuff. I don't know what's going to be there. I don't know what's going to be lost. A lot of it is lost. And, you know, kind of sitting with that is more emotionally challenging now than it was initially.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
Yeah, I like messaged my boss. I'm like, hey, I can't come to work. I had a house fire. I had an interview scheduled. I messaged the lady like, hey, I can't do this interview today. I had a house fire. And they're all like, oh, my God. And I'm like, oh, it's fine. It's not fine.
Everything's great.
Yeah, it's great. It's good. It's all good. It's fine.
Well, I want to end this chat. You said something about being in the White Castle.
Yeah.
Cravers.
I'm kind of a big deal.
Hall of Fame. Yeah. What is this? Like, what is this you speak of?
So White Castle has a Cravers Hall of Fame. Fans of White Castle, I don't know if you know this, we're called Cravers.
I love White Castle.
You're a Craver.
But how am I not in the Hall of Fame?
Well, you got to work for it.
Okay.
You really got to really work for it. I should have worn my jacket. I got a jacket. So how I got into the Hall of Fame is I, every year when they released the people that were in the White Castle Hall of Fame, I would say, I should be on this. And every year I'd say, I need to get it, put me in this. And I basically wore them down over the course of the last 18 years. Like,
do you have to eat a certain amount or no. Like you just have
to be a big, like,
you just have to love them.
A stan, as they would
call
it.
I am a stan.
Yeah. You might have the potential.
The chicken rings.
The chicken rings,
they
yeah.
used to have Big Red there, which really won me over.
Big Red's really good. You should probably submit an application.
I think you may have some clout and some connections if you could potentially
I can see what I could do for you.
Can you put a good word in for me? I'd love
Mention
to have that.
Mention White Castle a few times on your show. They're listening.
I'd
White
love
Castle
to have that
PR is listening.
Hey, White Castle, White Castle, White Castle.
Yeah. Yeah. So I got into the Hall of Fame. And then this past year, they were giving out Hall of Fame jackets. Nate over at Pursuit was doing like Hall of Fame jackets. I caught wind of that, and I was like, where's my jacket? So then they got me a jacket, and I wear it out.
Oh, absolutely. Why wouldn't
like
you?
Other people probably have it hanging somewhere. No, I'm like, oh, I'm going to brunch.
See another angle? You just threw another angle out,
yeah.
And you just upped the ante on why I like you so much.
Yeah, White Castle Hall of Fame.
Listen, I'm putting my hat in the ring right now for the White Castle jacket, man.
I'll vouch for you.
Thank you.
Yeah, for sure.
Monica, this has been so much fun.
This is a lot of fun.
I feel like we need to be friends now. I'm going to miss
probably.
You. Now I'm going
to
miss
have to
you.
Connect. We got to go
Absolutely.
Out.
Absolutely. Do all the things.
Yeah,
do
sure.
all the things.
Yeah.
All right. And if you're still out there following your girl, follow me on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. And until next time, keep moving, baby. And don't light your house on fire.
Don't light your house on fire. Dog who shall remain nameless.